How will you spend your tax refund, if you got one? In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore, in for David Brancaccio. The IRS expects to give refunds to 105.8 million taxpayers. That is down 2% from last year. If you are one of those lucky people, you may already know what you're going to spend that money on. Marketplace's Erica Barris looks at how people increasingly are spending theirs.
People often spend tax refunds on big-ticket items, says San Jose State University tax professor Annette Nellen.
Some big appliance, or they're going to help pay down some debt they might have.
Or take care of a medical issue that's been put on hold. That's according to research from JP Morgan Chase. It found that out-of-pocket spending on healthcare jumps by 60% the week after people get refunds. Stacey Dusitsina is a health policy professor at Vanderbilt University. She says this is the result of more high-deductible insurance plans and rising healthcare and drug costs.
People are not able to get the care that they need at the time that they need it.
Sometimes all people can do is hope a problem doesn't get worse, says patient advocate Debbie Deutsch.
People who are like, oh, I don't want to be put in the position of having to pay for my very expensive ocular prescription versus my groceries.
And last week, at an average $2,833, tax refunds were down 1.1% from last year. I'm Erica Barris for Marketplace.
Let's do the numbers. The FTSE in London is up 0.4%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are up in the 3 to 0.4% range, with the Dow future up 117 points. The 10-year Treasury yield is at 2.56%. And one more number for you, $339 million. That is how much French millionaires and billionaires are pledging to help reconstruct the Notre Dame Cathedral. The Pinault family, which owns Gucci, is pledging $112 million. The Arnault family, which owns L'Oreal, pledged double that. AT&T is selling what it owns of Hulu, which is now worth $15 billion under that deal. That's nearly triple Hulu's worth 3 years ago. The new valuation is a boost for Hulu in its rivalry with Netflix and Amazon over the eyeballs of TV watchers. Marketplace's Renata Sago has been following this. Renata, bring us up to speed on this latest Hulu deal.
Hulu used to be owned by three companies, AT&T, Disney, and Comcast. AT&T got a small stake in Hulu when it acquired Time Warner last year, but now AT&T has decided it's going to focus on building its own subscription streaming service to try and rival Netflix and Amazon Prime. So that's where this deal comes in. Now, Hulu is in the hands just of Disney and Comcast, and they've got a service that's been growing quickly. Hulu now has about 25 million subscribers.
But hasn't Netflix also been growing pretty fast, too?
It has. Just like Hulu's worth about three times what it was 3 years ago, Netflix has more than tripled. It's now worth $152 billion. The company ended 2018 with a reported 139 million subscribers. Lots of media companies are trying to compete with Netflix. AT&T left Hulu to start its own thing, but Disney owns about more than 60% of Hulu, and it's saying even as it's rolling out a new Disney Plus service this fall, it'll show Star Wars and Marvel content with some classic animated films. Disney so far says it plans to show more mature programming on Hulu.
All right, Marketplace's Renata Sago, thanks.
Thank you.
When you start a company, you'll probably want to trademark your business name with the Patent and Trademark Office so nobody can steal it. But what if you want to call your new enterprise something that we cannot say on the radio? Under a law known as the Lanham Act, the Patent and Trademark Office could reject such a name. Yesterday, the U.S. Supreme Court heard arguments saying that law violates free speech. Jeannie Frommer is an NYU law professor and wrote an amicus brief supporting the business owner challenging the law. Good morning.
Good morning.
So can you briefly explain the Lanham Act and what parts of it are being challenged? Like, what are the basic rules here?
So the Lanham Act provides federal protection to trademarks, to symbols, and it protects those marks against use in ways that are likely to confuse consumers.
And what does it say about bad words?
There are a number of grounds in the Lanham Act that provide a basis to refuse registration. One of those grounds is that immoral or scandalous marks cannot be registered.
Now, this case involves Eric Brunetti, who owns an apparel company whose name sounds just like the F word, but the last two letters are CT. The Federal Trademark Office denied him trademark protection for that business name. So what's he arguing?
He's arguing that this provision in trademark law is contrary to the First Amendment's protections for free speech.
Now, you make the argument that this rule is not necessarily applied consistently. Can you give us some examples from your research?
My collaborator, Barton Beebe, and I, we dug into the millions of trademark registration applications that are filed at the Patent and Trademark Office over a period of about 13 years. What we saw is that the Patent and Trademark Office is doing this in quite an inconsistent way. At the same time, it'll refuse certain mark applications for trying to register marks that are immoral or scandalous, and also say that they are confusingly similar to the same goods or services that they just registered.
It's just striking that the standard that the government is using is immoral and scandalous when our culture is so diverse that the meaning spans such a huge spectrum. It's just curious that the government is in a position to be able to decide what's immoral or scandalous.
Actually, in digging through this data, we found there were at least 22 refusals for one variation or another on F cancer. And there were others that were core political commentary. Someone sought to register Capitol Hill for magnets, similarly refused. And so it makes one wonder whether the trademark office should be deciding to grant registrations on the basis of immorality or scandalousness when a lot of this feels like core political speech.
NYU law professor Jeannie Frommer, it was a pleasure speaking with you.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Our producers are Victoria Craig, Michael Lipkin, Candice Manriquez-Wren, Daniel Shin, and Sasha Woodruff. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishour with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.